Pyramidalis. This is a small triangular muscle. It is rudimentary, that is basic, in human beings. It arises from the anterior surface of the body of the pubis. Its fibers pass upwards and medially to the inserted into the linear alba. The muscle is supplied by the subcostal nerve, T12. It is said to be tensile. When we say tensile, it means a muscle that tightens or strengthens or stretches a part of the body. So the pyramidalis is said to be a tensile of the linear alba, that is, it tightens or stretches the linear alba, but the need for such action is not clear. Deep arteries of the anterior abdominal wall. The anterior abdominal wall is supplied by 1, 2 large arteries from above, the superior epigastric and the musculophrenic arteries. Then we have the 2 large arteries from below, the inferior epigastric and the deep circumflex iliac artery. Then we also have the small branches of the intercostal, subcostal and lumbar arteries, which accompany the corresponding nerves. Now let's look at the rectus sheet. This is an aponeurotic sheet covering the rectus abdominis. It has 2 walls, the anterior and the posterior. So we'll consider them one by one. The anterior wall, it is complete, covering the muscle from end to end. Its composition is variable. It is firmly adherent to the tendineous intersections of the rectus muscle. The posterior wall, it is incomplete, being deficient above the costal margin and below the arcuate line. Arcuate line is the inferior margin of the posterior leaflet of the rectus sheet within the abdomen. Also, the posterior wall, the composition of the posterior wall is variable. It is free from the rectus muscle. We're talking about the rectus sheet. The medial wall now of the rectus sheet, fusion of all the aponeuroses in the midline, it's called the linear alba. Lateral wall, it is called linea semilunaris. It extends from the tip of the 9th costal cartilage to pubic tubercle. Formation, details about the formation of the walls are as follows. Let's look at the formation above the costal margin. Anterior wall is formed by the external oblique aponeurosis. The posterior wall, it is deficient. The rectus muscle rests directly on the 5th, 6th, and 7th costal cartilage. Then between the costal margin and the arcuate line, the anterior wall is formed by the external oblique aponeurosis and anterior lamina of the aponeurosis of the internal oblique. Posterior wall is formed by the posterior lamina of the aponeurosis of the internal oblique and aponeurosis of the transversus muscle. Midway between the umbilicus and the pubic symphysis, the posterior wall of the rectus sheet ends in the arcuate line or linea semicircularis or fold of Douglas. The line is concave downward. Below the arcuate line, the anterior wall of the rectus sheet is formed by the aponeurosis of the 3 flat muscles of the abdomen. You can say that the external oblique, the internal oblique, and the transversus. These are the 3 flat muscles of the abdomen. The aponeurosis of the transversus and the internal oblique are fused, but the external oblique aponeurosis remains separate. While the posterior wall is deficient, the rectus muscle rests on the fascia transversalis. The content of the rectus sheet. It has muscles, arteries, veins, and nerves. Muscles, arteries, veins, and nerves. So what are the muscles that are inside the rectus sheet? You have the rectus abdominis, which is the chief and the largest muscle, and the pyramidalis, if present, lies in front of the lower part of the rectus abdominis. So the pyramidalis lies in front of the lower part of the rectus abdominis, and it is usually very, very small, or sometimes even absent. The artery is found in the rectus sheath. You have the superior epigastric artery, the inferior epigastric artery. The veins found in the rectus sheath is the superior epigastric vena comitantes and the inferior epigastric vena comitantes. The nerves, these are the terminal parts of the lower six thoracic nerves, including the lower five intercostal nerves and the subcostal nerves. So what are the functions of the rectus sheath? It checks bowing of rectus muscle during its contraction and thus increasing the efficiency of the muscle. Secondly, it maintains the strength of the anterior abdominal wall. Now let's look at the fascia transversalis. This is the part of the The inner surface of the abdominal muscle is lined by fascia, which is separated from peritoneum by extraperitoneal connective tissue. That part of the fascia which lies the inner surface of the transversus abdominis muscle is called the fascia transversalis. So simply, the fascia transversalis is that part, the fascia, that lines the inner surface of the transversus abdominis. The inner surface, not the outer surface. It lines the inner surface of the transversus abdominis muscle. So that fascia that lines the inner surface of the transversus abdominis is called the fascia transversalis. The extent. Anteriorly, it is adherent to the linear alba above the umbilicus. Posteriorly, it merges with the anterior layer of the thoracolumbar fascia and it continues with the renal fascia. Superiorly, it is continuous with the diaphragmatic fascia. Inferiorly, it is attached to the inner lip of the iliac crest and to the lateral half of the inguinal ligament. At both these places, it is continuous with the fascia iliaca. Medially, it is attached to the pubic tubercle, the pubic crest, and the peritoneal line. Part of it is prolonged into the thigh as the anterior wall of the femoral sheath. Opening of the deep inguinal ring. We're looking at that because it is around the transversalis fascia that we have the opening of the deep inguinal ring. So about 1.2 centimeter above the mid inguinal point, there is an oval opening in the fascia transversalis. This opening is the deep inguinal ring. The ring lies immediately lateral to the inferior epigastric artery. It transmits the spermatic cord in males and the round ligament of the uterus in female. Prolongations of this fascia transversalis. A tubular prolongation of the fascia transversalis surrounds the spermatic cord, forming the internal spermatic fascia. 2. Over the femoral vessels, the fascia transversalis is prolonged into the thigh as the anterior wall of femoral sheath. Relation to vessels and nerves, that is, relation of this fascia transversalis to vessels and nerves. The main arteries of the abdominal wall and pelvic lie inside the fascia transversalis, while the main nerves are outside. That is why the femoral vessels are inside the femoral sheath, while the femoral nerve is outside the sheath. Now, the inguinal canal. We're coming to the climax of this episode. The inguinal canal. This is an oblique intermuscular passage in the lower part of the anterior abdominal wall, situated just above the medial half of the inguinal ligament. It is about 4 centimeters long or 1.5 inches and it is directed downward, forward, and medially. The inguinal canal extends from the deep inguinal ring to the superficial inguinal ring. The deep inguinal ring is an oval opening in the fascia transversalis situated 1.2 centimeters above the mid inguinal point and immediately lateral to the stem of the inferior epigastric artery. The superficial inguinal ring is a triangular gap in the external oblique aponeurosis. It is shaped like an obtuse angle triangle. The base of the triangle is formed by the pubic crest. The two sides of the triangle form the lateral or lower and the medial or upper margins of the opening. It is 2.5 cm long and 1.2 cm broad at the base. These margins are referred to as crura. At and beyond the apex of the triangle, the two crura are united by intercrural fibers. Boundaries, the boundaries of the inguinal canal. Let's look at first the anterior wall. In its whole extent, it consists of the skin, the superficial fascia, the external oblique aponeurosis, but in its lateral one third, it consists of the fleshly fibers of the internal oblique muscle. The posterior wall in its whole extent consists of the fascia transversalis, the extraperitoneal tissue, the parietal peritoneum. In its medial to third, it consists of the cojoint tendons at its medial end by the reflected part of the inguinal ligament. The roof of the inguinal canal, it is formed by the arched fibers of the internal oblique and transversus abdominis muscle. The floor, it is formed by the grooved upper surface of the inguinal ligament and at the medial end by the lacunar ligament. The inguinal canal is larger in males than in females. Now let's look at the structures passing through the inguinal canal. One, the spermatic cord in males or the round ligament of the uterus in females enters the inguinal canal through the deep inguinal ring and passes out through the superficial inguinal ring. Two, the ilioinguinal nerve enters the canal through the interval between the external and internal oblique muscles and passes out through the superficial inguinal ring. Constituent of the spermatic cord. What forms the spermatic cord? One, ductus deferens, the testicular and cremasteric arteries and the artery of the ductus deferens, the pampiniform plexus of veins, lymph vessels from the testis, the ilioinguinal nerve, genital branch of the genitofemoral nerve, and the plexus of the sympathetic nerves around the artery to the ductus deferens and visceral afferent nerve fibers. Remains of the processus vaginalis. Covering of the spermatic cord. What is covering it? From within outward, these are as follows. So let's look at what covers the spermatic cord from inside then outward. The internal spermatic fascia, the inside of the spermatic cord is covered by the internal spermatic fascia. This is derived from the fascia transversalis. It covers the cord in its whole extent. Then the cremasteric fascia is made up of the muscle loops constituting the cremaster muscle and the intervening areolar tissue. This is derived from the internal oblique and transversus abdominis muscle and therefore covers the cord below the level of these muscles. Third, the external spermatic fascia is derived from the external oblique aponeurosis. It covers the cord below the superficial inguinal ring. So to wrap up this episode, let's look at hernia. Hernia is a protrusion of any of the abdominal content through any of its walls. This is called external hernia. At times, the intestine or omentum, the omentum is just a sheet of fatty tissue that stretches over the abdomen. At times, the intestine or omentum protrude into the no entry zone within the abdominal cavity itself. The condition is called as internal hernia. So hernia consists of a sac, content, and covering. This sac is just the protrusion of the peritoneum. It comprises of a neck that is the narrow part, and a body, the bigger part. While the content of hernia are mostly the long, mobile, keen to move out cords of small intestine or omentum or any other viscera. Coverings are the layers of abdominal wall which are covering the hernia sac. So the types of abdominal hernia, we have different types of abdominal hernia. We have the internal hernia and the external hernia, just like I mentioned. It is internal when the protrusion of the loop of intestine is within the no entry zone of the peritoneum. That is, places where there's nothing actually there, but it's just the protrusion of those loop goes within that no entry zone of the peritoneum. Internal hernia mostly occurs in epiploic foramen or opening into the lesser sac of foramen of Winslow. The loop mostly gets strangulated when the arterial supply is blocked. The loop gets necrosed, and that is dead. It may also occur in the paraduodenal fossa. Let's look at some of the external hernia. It can include the umbilical hernia. The umbilical hernia, when you see some people having them, large novel, that's the umbilical hernia. We also have the para-umbilical hernia, femoral hernia, inguinal hernia, epigastric hernia, divarication of recti, incisional hernia, lumbar hernia. But we will be concerned about the inguinal hernia. The inguinal hernia is the protrusion of the loop of intestine through the inguinal wall or inguinal canal, is called inguinal hernia. When the protrusion occurs through the deep inguinal ring or the inguinal canal or superficial inguinal ring into the scrotum, it is called indirect or oblique inguinal hernia. It occurs in male infants, in children, and has a narrow neck of the hernia sac. Normally, the indirect or oblique inguinal hernia has a narrow neck of the inguinal sac. When the protrusion occurs through the weak posterior wall of the inguinal canal or triangle of Herzenberg, the hernia is a direct inguinal hernia, and it occurs in much older men and has a wider neck of hernia sac. The end.